I'm a bit vertically challenged, so I'm going to have to keep doing this throughout the night. It is such an honor to have such a busy man managing one crisis after the other, both here locally and abroad. Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman, the man behind the extraordinary gift of the givers, the bringers of hope and humanitarian help and relief. Although he apparently has four phones, he replies to his WhatsApp messages within 10 minutes. So for all those who like to blue tick people, some tips. Unfortunately, Dr. Suleiman couldn't join us physically, but he is joining us virtually to discuss his book, his biography, but also just to give our annual lecture. Oh, we're not yet. Okay, cool. No, there's a lot that we have in store for you. So I think that's going to be happening a bit later on in the evening. Now we will have a beautiful video that has been put together for us. Since 2019, 130 writers have been to Paulette House. More than 20 of their plays have been performed. 10 of them are now successfully published authors. 60,000 books have been put in the hands of young readers, and 20 youngsters are now published poets. The foundation also recently launched The Hive on its website. This is a platform where you can get to be a little bit familiar with all the opportunities from the foundation around workshops, residencies, and a lot more. Also on the platform, we have the Paulette House Stories. These are stories which are written by our JGF writers. So it's a beautiful masala of languages, genres, and different writing styles. But before you guys think that I've been paid to do this, I will let a video that has been compiled by Jeremio LaCorgia. I had to practice that one. Jeremio was also part of the JGF and Penn residency in 2019. We love to keep it in the family. Yes. Please watch the screens.
I'm Angela Briggs, the English language mentor on the Boesberg Book Writing Project. The project supports debut writers to develop their manuscripts in partnership with NB Publishers. Over the years, I've realized that it's the kitchen that most represents the work that we do on the Book Writing Project. At Paulette House, the kitchen is literally at the center of the physical space. You have to walk through it to access the big, beautiful back garden and find your way to the new writing room at the back. And coming in from the garden, you have to walk through it to reach the dining room or the sitting room. So too, our writers have to spend time working with the basic ingredients, their imagination, skills, and the stories they want to tell in our literary kitchen before reaching the outside world.
Ek is Michelle C. van Wyk en ek is 'n aktrise, 'n digter, 'n kabaretkunstenaar, stemkunstenaar, maar nou kan ek ook bynoem en met baie trots dat ek 'n playwriter is. Ek onthou toe ons net mooi in die Kaap geland het, het Mama Lee of Leanne van Rooi my kom afgelaai by die huis en voor ek uit die kar geklim het, sê sy, or a playwriter now. You can add that to your CV. And I was like, Uma, what? Insane. En ja, so Jake Scher wil julle laat mense se drome waar word. Maar ja, net wat 'n fantastiese geleentheid en hoe bevoorreg was ek nie om deel te kon wees van die Natty Young Stereo program. Want ek dink daar's so baie mense wat met stories rondloop, maar hulle weet nie noodwendig hoe om dit te execute nie. Maar dan kom julle en julle hou ons hande vas en gee ons 'n platform om hierdie stories vlerke te gee. En as 'n mens soos in Polethuis instap en jy sien al die foto's van almal wat daar voor en daar was, 'n mens kan nie help om te wonder, just die van waar kom hierdie mense oral. En ek dink, dit dra ook by tot by diverse stemme wat dan gehoor word. Want elke skrywer wat daar by die huis opdag, kom met 'n kom vandaan, jy weet, 'n herkoms, 'n kultuur en natuurlik gaan daai ook in hulle werk reflekteer en ek dink dit is net 'n manier om Suid-Afrika 'n meer diverse stem te laat gee, dat ons by mekaar kan leer en is dit nie net amazing nie.
My name is Reginald Afke. I'm part of the Jakes Gerwel and NB Publishers Mentorship Program for 2023. The program really meant a lot for me. I would say it was life-changing simply because I'm writing a memoir. So it's been a therapeutic experience for myself. A lot of crying, a lot of laughing, and most importantly, a lot of healing. I think it's been a memorable experience going back, the traveling all the way from Johannesburg, landing in Port Elizabeth, traveling through to Somerset East, exploring and seeing the beautiful Eastern Cape.
Wat 'n amazing geleentheid is dit nie om heel dag lank tussen net skrywers en boeke te wees. Dit verbreed die horisone op so 'n ander manier. Dis soos onbeskryflik. Ek raak heeltemal excited daaroor. Ek leer so baie. Ek doen so baie. Met al die leekshede wat gepaard gaan daarmee om nie by jou day job te wees nie en net te sit en skryf, dit is die amazingste gevoel ooit.
It was the best experience of my life. I think it was the first time in my life where I was confident enough to call myself an author. When I stepped into the writer's house, I was like, okay, I must really be a writer to be here. It was really my proudest moment. For me, what I really like the most about the guys in the Jakes Gerwel Foundation is that I feel like they are really on a mission to make your life as convenient as possible. It's almost like they go out of their way to accommodate you. From the very first time I started corresponding with Theo Cam, I could tell that he really cared and he wanted this experience to be as soon as it could be for me. And I really liked that. I appreciated it. He took care of everything down to my dietary needs. And I just wanna point that out. Oh my God, the food was really amazing.
What makes the Jakes Gerwel Foundation residency so special is the way that it takes writers out of their studies from where they're sitting behind their computers and puts them in a house together and in a way forces them to interact with each other in a creative way. And what makes that quite special, I think, is that it almost brings about an interrogation of your own writing process and how you see literature and what it should do in the world today, how you see South Africa and what literature and writing should be doing in that space. And what makes it also very interesting is there's an international component to the group. We had writers from Malawi and from Germany, and questions get asked, you know, about what is South Africa and what does it mean? And you find that the South Africans, who are all from various backgrounds and races and ages, don't necessarily agree on those answers. And I think that leads to a very interesting discussion that is held at a table in Jakes Gerwel's lounge, where you see his books and his library. You are literally under a portrait of the thinker himself. And I think what happens then is a sort of a family dynamic develops between the various writers. Obviously, given the different ages and so forth, it becomes a bit like the rituals of a family that sit down for dinner every evening and return to similar discussions that were held on previous days, and also interrogate how that has influenced their own writing.
When I got the news that I had made it into this residency by the Jakes Gerwel Foundation, I was ecstatic, and this mostly came from a place of, you know, knowing that I've always wanted to write. But being afraid of it for the most part. And so I came to this residency in a different province, and I realized that a lot of us are scared. The place is really, it's so pretty, it's so inviting, it's calming, it's peaceful, it's like conducive for writing, and so I really, really appreciate that. And I think a lot of people are going to say that, but Chef Gilbert, I can't. The food here is, I don't know how I'm gonna get back home. It's gonna be very sad. I think the thing I'm gonna miss the most is the food.
49 Bullet House. Mountains, cows, and waterfalls. This place a creative call. Here at Bullet House. The place where concepts are penned down, our stories can fly now. Here at Bullet House, Bullet House, Bullet House.
Repeat. Hier waar oom Chexy gekom het, en waar auntie Phoebe donate het, vir die stories wat ons vertel, vir die stories wat ons vertel. Bullet House.
It is really beautiful to see the entire experience, you know. It becomes like a family, you know. It's a warm place, there is food, there is laughter, there is music. I feel like I have become one with everybody that has been to Pullet House with me. So now I think we are ready for the main event. This is a man that we all know, have all heard of, and a man who is extremely busy, always managing one crisis after the other. Dr. MTS Suleiman is giving our lecture tonight, and like I mentioned, because of some health issues, he will not be joining us physically, but he is coming through virtually, and we're good to roll. So, again, please turn your eyes to the screen.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for the invite. I'm sorry it has happened the second time. When we have supposed to have the event earlier in the year, I haven't been to theater. And as it happened, I ended up going to theater again last week. So, unfortunately, I could not be with you this evening. But in any case, Theo Kamp, thank you for inviting me. And the management of the Jake Scarborough Foundation. I know the country and the world is caught up with sadness, people not sharing uncertainty about life, what the challenges are, where the world is going. My talk to you is about spirituality. It's about faith, and I'd like to bring many examples in about what I'm about to say. Let's start off with the man Jake Scarborough himself. You see, last year, I was in Quebeca, and we got called by the city council, the mayor, and the municipality, and the engineers, and by the business chamber to say that the city is in big trouble. They're heading for day zero. Can we come and assist and see what's possible? We started drilling boreholes. We put in 50 boreholes in various parts of the city to save the city. Along the line, a school teacher from a principal from Patterson High sends a message to one of my teams, and they said, can you please come here and look at the possibility of putting a borehole in Patterson High? So my teams go, I haven't been there. I look at the site from what they've sent me. I said, it's authorized, go ahead. A few weeks later, I come to open up a borehole in St. Albans School. That principal is very, very alert, says, I know you're coming to St. Albans School. Can you just please come past my school for 5 to 10 minutes? So I said, madam, I'm not sure if that's going to be possible because I've got multiple engagements whenever I travel, but I'll see what's possible. Life had it that I managed to get there to the school. Rose the Donker, the principal, invites me. She takes me to the bowl and says, thank you very much. And as we're walking around the school, I see 7 burnt classrooms, matric classrooms. I said, madam, how long has this taken place? She says, 2015. I said, how do you manage? She said, we have 55 kids in a class. And I said, has anybody not fixed this thing up? She says, no. So I said, if I fix it up, is it fine? She says, yes. But they said it has to be scrapped. So I walk around the school, the burnt buildings, and I said, no, this, I'm not an engineer. I'm not a builder, but I can tell you now, this thing doesn't have to be scrapped. And so while we're walking, she says, do you know who came to the school? Which person was taught in the school? I said, no, I don't know. She says, Jake Scarwell was a person who grew up and learned in the school. She said, Dennis Brutus was from here. And I think the third person she mentions was George Botha. All critically important people in the anti-apartheid movement and during the time of pre-94. I said, madam, you have a very historical school. She says, yes. She takes me further down. She says, here's the lab. The first lab in the name of the person, the first person as killed in detention in South Africa. This lab is named after him. I said, given the names, your commitment, the dedication, you've got the ball. We're going to put the 7 classrooms in and we'll see what else we can do. And subsequently to that, we put an AstroTurf in the school. That school, being a public school, has kept up the honor of Professor Jake Scarwell. They won the quiz competitions and beat every other private school and government school in the region. They've excelled in sports and they've excelled in everything else. The community, the principal, the teachers, the kids are incredible in everything that they do. That's a great memory for Professor Jake Scarwell. And I'm so impressed and so proud to be part of that school. A month ago, we were in Sabeha again, and the principal, Rosa Donker, arranged a gathering of 185 principals in the city to talk, to motivate them, to learn about their problems, how to come to education, how to upgrade our children, and how to bring hope to our people. People are hopeless. They say it's a failed state. Is there any hope? What will happen to our children? What will happen to us? People are leaving South Africa. We can't go. We don't have the means. We are afraid. Is there any hope? There's absolutely nothing to fear. This is a great country. Yes, it has its problems, like every other country in the world. But no problem is insurmountable. I know. I'm a disaster specialist. 33 years of my life, that's all I've done. Go to the most horrific places on earth, where people tear each other apart. War, internecine strife, civil wars, neighbors, friends, families, communities tear each other apart. Cyclones, tsunamis, hurricanes, floods, drought, famine. Those are all the kind of things that I see and do for the last 33 years of my life. We're nowhere near a failed state. No problem is insurmountable. While they're telling you people are leaving the country, have they told you how many people are coming back? Just last night, a man called one of my team members. He says, I'm from the UK. I've been here for 13 years. 25th December is my last day in UK. I'm coming back home to the greatest country on earth. I'm coming back to South Africa. In the same city of Gqeberha, I was with German investors. They invest in alloys. All the alloys for all the motor industry are made by this company. And they said to me, whilst I was doing a presentation at the business chamber, they came to me and said, you people of South Africans are a crazy nation. So I said, what do you mean? You said you guys fight about everything. But when it comes to common issues, you guys always stand together. And he said, there's something different about you. Not me, South Africans. And I said, what's different about us? Because there's some kind of innate spirit that you have, a spirit of goodwill, of holding hands together, of being together, of standing for each other. He says, I'm a German. We come from Europe. But for the last year, I've come repeatedly to South Africa, and I've brought my wife with me with an ulterior motive. I wanted to get used to this country because if there's any country in the world that I would like to stay in, it's South Africa. That's a sentiment that people all over the world have been expressing. South Africans need to understand that. But what takes away the fear and anxiety? The narrative has to change. Two critical components are missing in the dialogue. And those two components are faith and spirituality. You see, whether we like it or not, faith is the essence of everything. All of us have gone to some kind of religious school, religious education, been to the church, the synagogue, the temple, the mosque, whatever. We've had some kind of background in our lives. Without faith and spirituality, there is no positivity and no hope. Source of hope and positivity only comes from faith and spirituality. A few months ago, our trucks came into Queenstown, Komani. A black lady, the emphasis on race is deliberate, comes out from the rural area at 5 p.m. It's almost dark, it's winter. She looks heavenwards on crutches and she says, "Thank you. You never let me down." No food in the house, no income, nobody to depend on, nobody to share with, no hope of anything coming from anywhere. We landed on Komani, I don't know why, but we were there and she got her support. For whatever it may be, her gratitude was profound. People of faith have profound gratitude, no matter how small or how big it may be. 20th January 2010, 8 days into the Haiti earthquake that took place on 12 January 2010, 5:13 in the afternoon, 7.0 on the Richter scale, convulsions for 40 seconds, wiped out 220,000 people. Day 8, in the collapsed Catholic Church, my team's ear sounds in the rubble. And 3 hours later, they pull out alive, 64-year-old El Azizi. No oxygen, no food, no water, fractured hip, completely enmeshed in the rubble. Her first words to my team was, "I love God Almighty." A sense of faith and spirituality is what kept her alive. Faith and spirituality gave hope and positivity. And 8 days later, it was rewarded. She was pulled out alive. Her next words to my team was, "I love you." That the essence of faith and spirituality and religion is love. And that's what needs to return to all of us out in our country, in our continent, and in our world. So let's go a bit further back from where all this started. I told you it's all about spirituality. Gift of the Givers is not my organization. I didn't get up one morning and say to myself, "I think today, I'll form an organization, give it a name, get some founder members, write some points, and draw up a constitution." It never happened like that. It was a calling in a true sense. Everything about the organization is spiritual. People know 6 August 1992 is the official date. To me, the spirituality started in 1985. Let me explain. You see, in 1985, I was doing internship in King Edward Hospital in Durban. At that point, being young, all young people like me have aspirations. And I said to myself, in the following year, 1986, I will become a medical officer, and then a registrar, and then I will become a specialist in internal medicine. I will be a physician, and thereafter go even further if I want to. But it never happened like that. In that time, pre-94, there were not many posts, so I couldn't study further. I had a choice of performing the cartwheels, sitting in the corner, moping, being depressed, and saying it's the end of the world. Totally depressed, nothing to do. All I can say, there's faith, there's spirituality, there's hope, there are alternatives, God is great. And I decide to go into private practice in Pietermaritzburg. I lived in Durban. I'm born in Potchefstroom, moved to Durban in 1974, and in 1986, after qualification, I moved to Pietermaritzburg. I said I'll set up private practice in Pietermaritzburg. It's something I never wanted to do. But in life, there are a lot of things that we don't want to do. We just have to go forward and do what has to be done. You see, we have a teaching. We don't pray for what we want. We pray for what is good for us. Because what you want may not necessarily be good for you. And that's why when you have obstacles, road bumps, things don't work out, that doesn't work out, doesn't work out for my child, for my wife, for myself, don't look at it negatively. Go back and look at it with a positive mind's eye and say, why? Why this didn't happen? And quite often you'll find that why it didn't happen because it was not in your interest. Something better was planned out for you and you need to embrace it. But you need patience. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen in 5 minutes or 5 days. It may take weeks, months, or years. Fate asks you to embrace patience. So I land up in Maritzburg in January 86. And I meet an Afrikaner man. My new neighbor in my new building is a butcher. He comes to me and he says, this Afrikaner guy from Pretoria moved to Maritzburg to teach French at the university. He's got a medical problem. He needs a doctor. So Mula and I meet. And after some sessions, he tells me of a spiritual teacher that he met in Turkey, in America, that had come from Turkey. And he says, I need you to meet this spiritual teacher. He's a Turk, a Muslim, a Sufi. But when I talk to you and I think of my experience with him, there's a lot of similarities. So he tells me in 1986, you need to go to Turkey. So I joke with him. I said, Miller, it's 1986. I still haven't seen Cape Town. When am I going to get to Turkey? He looks at me and he says something very profound. Every message that I'm telling is very important for you to reflect on. He says, my friend, what God wills happens. There's a time and a place. His words didn't go cold. August 91, my wife and I landed up in Turkey. It's a very long story. But when we got there, it was at the most critical time in the world. It was post-Gulf War. Gulf War had polarized nations, religions, civilizations. Samuel Huntington spoke of a clash of civilizations. And the perception was Christians, Jews, and Hindus on one side, and Muslims on the other side. East on one side, West on the other side. And coming from an apartheid past just didn't help. And as we walked into the spiritual place of that Turkish Sufi Muslim person in Istanbul, my wife and I thought we came to the wrong place. In that place, Americans, Russians, people from Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Germany, Canada, Brazil, Argentina, Mexico, Australia, New Zealand, parts of Southeast Asia and Africa, Hindus, Christians, Jews, Muslims, people of other faith and people of no religion, all in a Muslim holy place, post-Gulf War. No friction, no fighting, no discord, no anger. How is this possible? The spiritual teacher looked at the shock on my face and he said, what do you see? I said, I'm totally confused. What are people of different religions and different nationalities doing in a Muslim holy place? We fought with these people all over the world. Why are they here? He said, my friend, my son, you see right. Mankind is one single nation. The God of all mankind is one. We just call him by different names. Any imam, priest, sheikh, pandit, rabbi, Sufi, or anyone else that preaches violence, extremism, discord, terrorism, conflict, confrontation, or disorder is not a man of God. Don't follow him. Anyone who preaches love, kindness, compassion, and mercy is a man of God. Follow him. He says, my son, we don't look at the negativity in people. The bad behavior of one individual or a group or a slightly bigger group is not indicative of an entire religion, an entire nation, and an entire community. We need to have an open mind. And even when we engage people, we don't look at the faults in the people. We look at the good in the people. In our business, we save souls. We look at the people, and even no matter how much negative they have in them, we don't ever mention the negative. We always say, my friend, you did this good, and you did that good, and you did that good. And as the law of spirituality is, and the law of universe is, as you keep mentioning the positive comes up, and the negative goes down. He said, my son, none of us, even we spiritual teachers, none of us are perfect. There is no imperfect human being. There is no perfect human being. We all have our faults. And he says, we all may have bad habits, but it doesn't make us bad people. When you relate to people, remember that they may have bad habits, but it doesn't make them bad people. Don't be judgmental. Be open-minded. Embrace, love, show compassion, save the soul. I fell in love with what I heard and what I saw. I came back to South Africa. The yearning, like an addiction, was there strongly. 6 August 1992, 7 years later from the first spiritual thinking in 1985, came the official date of the formation of Gift of the Givers. 10 p.m. Thursday night, like tonight, after a spiritual session called a zikr. In a zikr, you celebrate God's names in Arabic. The spiritual teacher picks up his head, makes eye contact with me, and looks heavenward at the same time. In fluent Turkish, and I don't speak a word of Turkish, but I understood every single word that he said in Turkish that night. He said, my son, I'm not asking you. I'm instructing you to form an organization. The name in Arabic will be Waqful Waqifin. Translated, Gift of the Givers. You will serve all people of all races, all religions, all colors, all classes, all cultures, of any geographical location and of any political affiliation. But you will serve them unconditionally. You will expect nothing in return, not even a thank you. In fact, in what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life, expect to get a kick up your back. If you don't get a kick up your back, regard that as a bonus. Serve people with love, kindness, compassion, and mercy. And remember, the dignity of man is foremost. No matter what happens, remember, the dignity of man is foremost. When somebody is down, don't push them down further. Hold them, elevate them. Wipe the tear of a grieving child. Caress the head of an orphan. Say words of good counsel to a widow. These things are free. They don't cost anything. Clothe the naked. Feed the hungry. Provide water to the thirsty. And in everything that you do, be the best at what you do. Not because of ego. Ego is destructive. Ego is a monster. Ego is horrendous. Not because of ego, but because you're dealing with human life, human emotion, human suffering, and human dignity. My son, this is an instruction for you for the rest of your life. I was 30 years old. And then he said, remember that whatever you do is done through you and not by you. There is no place for ego. 31 years in the business, and I'm not stupid. Intelligence tells me that the kind of things being done is not humanly possible. I asked him, how is it that you speak Turkish, I understand, and when other people speak Turkish, I don't understand? He said, my son, when the hearts connect and the souls connect, the words become understandable. I said, I'm a doctor. I have three practices, private practices, in a place called Pietermaritzburg in South Africa. What exactly am I supposed to do? And when am I supposed to do this? He looked at me deeply in my eye And he just said one line. You will know. For 31 years, I do know what to do, what not to do, what to touch, what not to touch. In fact, the moment I walked out of that place, on the 6th of August, 1992, it came to me, respond to the civil war in Bosnia. The same month in August, I took in 32 containers of aid into a war zone all alone. 3 months later, 8 containers of aid of winter items. The chill factor in Eastern Europe can reach minus 21 degrees in winter. Took that aid in, and the following year, 1993, we designed the world's first containerized mobile hospital. A product of South African technology, a product of South African engineering, built in South Africa and taken to Europe. A world first. CNN, 28 state-of-the-art containers, with 10 backup containers, theater, ICU, X-ray, sterilization, dental unit, burn unit, orthopedics, gynecology, obstetrics, pediatrics, every aspect. When CNN filmed the hospital on the 1st of February, 1994, the CNN journalist said, the South African containerized mobile hospital is equivalent to any of the best hospitals in Europe. He said, be the best, save lives, be skilled in whatever you do. So let's take an extension of that hospital and let's reconnect it to spirituality. You see, that instruction to help Bosnia came in 1992, and it came from Turkey. So remember, Turkey and Bosnia. So let's go to Cape Town, where I eventually got to after 1986, and several times in the year after that too. So in November 2022, my friend from Cape Town calls me and he says, would you like to meet the new general manager of Turkish Airlines? He's moving from San Francisco to Cape Town. Would you like to meet him? I said, Nisad, in my business, I'm a disaster specialist. I connect with airlines, with ships, with networks, with ambassadors, with governments, with communication systems. That's what I do. Yes, the answer is yes. But I said, let's leave it for when it's supposed to happen. 1st February this year, I'm getting into the plane at King Shaka Airport to fly to Cape Town. The boss upstairs reminds me, remember your friend called you in November last year? You need to make the call. So I call Nisar and I say, is the Turkish guy here? He said, I'll call you back in 2 minutes. Calls me back in 2 minutes. We're having supper after 9 tonight at Saray, the Turkish restaurant at the waterfront. Half past nine, he says. I get off the plane, straight to the restaurant, and 9:30, I get there. My first words to Mohammed Sinan, general manager of Turkish Airlines. I'm looking for an airline partner in the event there's an earthquake in the country, and I need to move search and rescue personnel, dog handlers, dogs, medical personnel, medical equipment, search and rescue equipment, and humanitarian supplies, food, blankets, tents, medicines, and the works. But I need to move them fast, without hindrance, without delay, to get to the zone and to get fast where it's required. Is this possible with your airline? Yes, it's possible. 5 days later, 4:17 in the morning, 7.8 on the Richter scale, the earthquake hits his country. What's the chance of that being a coincidence? 12 hours later, our teams are ready to fly to Turkey because that arrangement was made not in November last year, but on the 1st of February, 2023. There's a time and a place you will know everything is politically directed. 172 teams, 272 countries, sorry, respond to the Turkish earthquake. Some sending one, some sending two, some sending three teams. Let's average it to 300 teams from all over the world. You don't decide where you're going to go. The Turkish government decides where you go because they place all the teams. So 12 teams go to Hatay, the most destroyed city in the whole of Turkey. 16 million people were caught up in that earthquake. From the 12 teams, there's only one non-governmental team. That's us, Gift of the Givers. Two teams from China government, two teams from Turkey government, one from Italy, one from Croatia, one from Serbia, one from Bosnia. Remember, keep that in your mind. One from Saudi Arabia, one from Oman, one from Jordan, and the Gift of the Givers team. Day 8, exactly what happened in Haiti on day 8. The dog of Brigadier Francis Woodley comes and says, you better check there. So the teams go to the building and they pull out alive a 90-year-old grandmother. The other teams were impressed at the skill of the South African search and rescue team and the dogs that we had. And they said, your dogs are highly skilled. Your dog is different. How is a dog different? And she asked, what do you mean the dog is different? And they said, our dog can only smell, and one dog is required to smell a live person, and another dog is required to smell a deceased person. One dog can't do both. How come your dog can do that? Both. Smell a live person and smell a deceased person at the same time. Your dog can do that? We said, yes. Our dog is South African. South Africans can do anything. We need to believe in ourselves. But that South African dog can only get that kind of skill because it's got a handler that's got that kind of skill. It's got a handler that's got the spirit of Ubuntu, the spirit of spirituality that can transfer that to the dog. And then, let's say I mentioned the word Turkey and Bosnia specifically after I said I'm going to take you on a spiritual journey. One of the teams I told you was the Bosnian team. A few days into the earthquake, the Bosnian team member comes to my team leader, pats him on the shoulder, and starts sobbing. So my team member said, what happened to you? He said, we know the name of your organization. So my team member asks, what do you mean? He takes out a wallet, and in the wallet, he takes out a picture, and in the picture, there's a mother and a baby. He says, that baby is me. That lady is my mother. We know your name. So we ask again, what do you mean? He said, you see, in 1993, there was an organization called Gift of the Givers that came from South Africa and put a containerized mobile hospital in Bosnia. I was born in that hospital. That's me. We associate life and living with Gift of the Givers. 172 countries, 300 teams. Only 12 teams get selected to go to Hatay. From the 12 teams, one is South African and one is Bosnian. And from the Bosnian team, the member that was born in the hospital comes to be as part of that team. What is the chance of that being a coincidence? Fate and spirituality is a source of all hope and all positivity. 2012, I walk with my team member into Syria. The country is falling apart. We're not a failed state. We're far from a failed state. We are people who don't have vengeance, who don't have anger, who forgive. But all the ills of the past, they forgive and they build the country. We're not anywhere near that. When members, neighbors, friends, same religion, same culture, tore each other apart. And I walked into that country. And I meet a doctor and I said, we want to help you, but I need a building that can be converted into a hospital. Let me tell you some spiritual things which is going to be a little bit difficult to understand because it's rooted in Islamic culture. In any case, he says, This town we just liberated 10 days ago from Assad's forces. You've come at the right time. Here's a building that was supposed to be used for old people. No old people want to stay here. You can have this building. Now, a part before that, you see, I'd gone all over to Syria. I just couldn't find the right place to intervene in. I came to this place. The spiritual order that I belong to, the Sufi order, is called Halveti Jirahi. I look at the mosque in the town, in the village called Darkush, where I eventually landed and met this cardiothoracic surgeon. The name of Jirahi comes from an Islamic scholar called Abu Ubaidah bin Jarrah. Jirahi, coming from Jarrah. The man takes me to the mosque, and after a while he speaks, just casually out of the blue. He said, this mosque was burned by Abu Ubaidah bin Jarrah. Total coincidence, is that possible? Anyway, we go to the building. And I said, my friend, this building is too small. We need to go upwards, backwards, sideways, forwards. I need to land across the road and four or five other buildings. He looks at me and said, but you haven't even started with the first patient yet. How do you want all these other things? I said, we give from the givers. I know what's going to happen. This building is too small. He said, okay, if you need to go up, we need to find an engineer. Now, because the town got liberated 10 days ago, and I came with the same gift shirt and walked into a building where every foreigner is treated with suspicion because they don't know where, which side you're coming from. But the fact that I was with Dr. Ahmed Gandur, the hero of the town, people thought maybe it's fine. So other people came, walked into the same building that Dr. Gandur took me into that building. And a man came and he said, I'm sorry. I said, you speak English? He says, yes. I said, I'm sorry, but I overheard your conversation. You said you need an engineer. I said, yes, we do need an engineer. Can you help? He said, yes. I'm an engineer. So I said, can we go up here? Can we go upwards? He said, yes. Without hesitation, two floors. I said, oh, wait a minute, my friend. What kind of engineer are you? So he said, what do you mean? I said, you haven't seen the drawing. You haven't seen the steel content. You haven't seen the concrete base. You haven't seen how strong the floor is and the foundation is. How you can tell me just two floors going up? Which kind of engineer are you? He looks at me and he says, my friend, cool it. I'm the guy that built this building. That's not the strange part. 15 million people displaced from Syria, internally and externally. This man left the city of Darkush, where he lived in. He left many years ago and never, ever came back. The day I needed an engineer, that very minute, in that hour of that day, in that building in Darkush, the engineer that never came back turns up in front of me and tells me, you can go up two floors. Is this a coincidence? I can give you numerous stories about all these kind of things that happen. But let's fast forward a little bit to 2017. And let's listen to another spiritual aspect of what happened in South Africa. You see, on 3rd June 2017, there's a massive fire in Knysna. Few days before that, a man from Pretoria calls me and tells me, I need to send water to Cape Town. They're approaching day zero. So I told him, are you out of your mind? They can just buy bottled water in Cape Town. What's the point of sending it all the way from Pretoria? The transport cost is more expensive than the water. He started saying, no, please, man, I took donor money and I did this and I did that. I said, why are you making your problem my problem? He said, please, you need to help me. So very, very reluctantly, I take the bottle of water, put it on a truck, and guess what date the water truck passes Knysna? 3rd June 2017. We hear in the morning that there's no water because there's a drought. That same water that I did not want to send to Cape Town. At that part of the night, I'm now looking for the driver. Where are you? I'm in Three Sisters. Turn around and drive to Knysna. There's no water in the town. And the first truck that arrives at 6 o'clock in the morning is the truck that I just didn't want to send to Cape Town. God Almighty works his plan in a very, very strange way. We provided water, food parcels, hygiene packs, detergents for 20,000 families. We sent in our own firefighters, search and rescue personnel, advanced life support paramedics, advanced life support ambulance, medical teams, delivered babies, moved patients from Knysna to Georgia and other hospitals, looked after the cats and the dogs. They wanted pet food. We gave them 31 tons of pet food. We fed 1,200 firefighters twice a day with energy foods, bottled water, energy drink, and hot meals every day. And then came people and said, what about the animals in the farms? The horses, the pigs, the cows, the sheep, the goats, all need help. We brought in fodder for them. They said, what about the animals in the wild, an elephant in the park? We brought more support for them. And they said, what about the bees? 22 million bees got destroyed in the fire. We rehabilitated the bees, brought 300 new beehives, paid for pollen and nectar substitute, provided the sugar solution, and gave money to grow new plants and support a research center for bees. All that happened. And whilst that was happening, somebody said, do you know there's a drought in Sutherland? That animal count is dropping? That the prize merino sheep, 442,000, the count is dropping rapidly to 400, to 350, to 300,000. The economy is going to collapse. The farmers are going to collapse. We need to save the farms. We sent in 350 million rand worth of fodder to save Sutherland and the Northern Cape. July 2018, the farmers called and they said, thank you for the fodder, but we're done. We can't survive anymore. We asked, what do you mean? They said, the water is dry. All the boreholes have dried up. There is no water. Our sheep are not going to live. They can't have fodder without water. They won't survive. So I said, what do you mean it's over? Nothing is over. There's faith and spirituality. With that comes positivity and hope. I sent in my drilling teams, and we drilled 238 boreholes to save the sheep. We talk about faith and spirituality. It's 2023. Those farmers have been holding on to faith and spirituality to survive. For the first time in January 2022, the sheep count is starting to turn around. It finally dropped to 32,000. It's not going upwards. They didn't throw in the towel. They didn't give up. They waited and they prayed. And faith and spirituality is turning the situation around. God says faith is not an easy thing. I certainly will test you. And the tests are not easy. I'm going to give you probably one more last story. At the same time, whilst we were in Knysna, the disaster management of Beaufort West called and said, there's no water. The town is running dry. All the people said, we will not find water in Beaufort West. We had serious trouble. I said, there's no water in Beaufort West. Only if Dr. Gideon Groeneval, the hydrologist that worked with us, says there's no water. If he says there's no water, then there's no water. If he says he can find water, then there is water. So Gideon Groeneval goes to Beaufort West. 2 weeks, only drilling dust, and eating dust. And nothing else. Finally, it's a Friday. It's prayer time for me at 12 o'clock. I'm about to start prayer, and it comes to me that Gideon is going to find water today. So I send him a message. I said, Dr. Groeneval, you will find water today. When the WhatsApp reaches him, he's in prostration on the ground in Beaufort West. He gets up, looks at the message, and he tells Alfred, next stream, you're going to find water to get today. So Alfred said, we've been drilling here for 2 weeks and we're only eating sand. You're on the ground. Where are we going to find this water? Ezra picks up his head across the ground in a distance on a mountain. He sees the outline of a white horse. They call that area the Witpert. And he says, there. So Alfred says, my friend, I've been eating too much dust for the last 2 weeks. The brain is conked. Where the hell are we going to find water there? He says, we need to go there. So they take the drilling machine and they go. And they come to a gate and they ask somebody like, whose gate is this? They said, oh, that guy is never going to allow you to go through his gate. It's never going to happen. So I said, I need a number. Gets the number of the foreman. The foreman said, sorry, it's not going to happen. But in any case, I'll give you the number of the farmer. You can try. So the phone rings. The farmer answers and says, is this Gideon Groenewald? Gideon gets a shock. He says, yes. He said, I've been waiting for this call. The gate number is this. This is the code. You may enter. Gideon goes through, sets the drilling machine to start drilling. And as it's about to drill, it jumps. They set it a second time, it jumps. They set it a third time, it jumps. Gideon tells Alfred, just drill where this machine is jumping. And as they drill, everybody said, no water in Beaufort West. Where the machine jumped, 20,000 liters per hour. We drilled 7 boreholes and we drilled the water from the borehole into the Hamka Dam, brought it into the municipality and in the reservoir and put it all around Beaufort West. We put 2 additional boreholes in the old age homes and the schools, and Beaufort West got water. So totally spiritual in everything that happened. My final point, this is a great country. You have faith in God Almighty. You have positivity. You are willing to share. You are willing to do good. We are going to go big places. Why is it telling you people are leaving the country? I told you in the beginning, they're not telling you how many are coming back. I met the general manager of Emirates Airlines and asked him, how's the situation? He says, pre-COVID, we had 48 flights a week to South Africa. We're already on 42 flights a week to South Africa. We are expanding. Air France, Turkish Airlines, Ethiopian Airlines, everybody is expanding their route because everybody wants to come to South Africa, to the so-called failed state. Investors are looking how much to invest in the country. In PE, again, let's go back there. Sabiha, the city of Rose the Donker. Hive and the green ammonia people are going to invest 100 billion rand into our country. Future Life has just put in 75 million rand in a new plant in Dubai Internet Trading Port in Durban. So many other companies are coming to invest and expand their portfolio. 2 months ago, there was a cardiology conference in Cape Town in the CTICC, where you guys are not far from there. 2,000 cardiologists from all over the world, what their families came to our country to spend money and look at our country. On the 4th of December, the world's largest, the International Neurosurgical Conference is taking place in Cape Town on the 4th of December. It's a conference that I'm going to be opening. Hopefully, I'll be ready enough to fly by that time. Otherwise, we'll have another problem like tonight. In any case, people from all over the world are coming into our country. Investors are seeing the value, and people love our spirituality. They love our attitude. They love our warmth and compassion. Ladies and gentlemen, this country has helped a lot of people in our country and all over the world. Wherever I go, what gift of the givers? We've intervened in 46 countries. People only send prayer for our people and our country, and God upstairs is listening. Thank you very, very much for your time. All I need you to understand is there's every hope in the world. As long as you have faith and spirituality, guaranteed you will be tested. That's the law of all religion. But if you have patience and faith, you'll overcome everything. Nothing is insurmountable. We'll fix the crime. We'll fix Transnet. We'll fix ESCOM. We'll fix corruption. We'll fix the high inflation rate. We'll fix everything. Because by the grace of God, His mercy never leaves a people. May you have a fantastic evening. May the memory of Professor Jake Scherwell live forever. That man is an intensely good man, and may his soul be blessed in heaven. And thank you very much, Theo Camp and the committee, for remembering Professor Jake Scherwell every year. Good evening, good night, and thank you very much.
Give hope. Whatever you do is done through you and not by you. No problem is insurmountable. It is truly amazing to listen to someone who has witnessed so much and is so full of hope. Thank you to Dr. M.T.S. Suleiman for that beautiful reminder to always surrender to purpose. Dr. M.T.S. Suleiman's book is available for purchase at the back over there. I'm sure you've all got your coins ready since we're readers and we love buying books. We're going to take a bit of a body break, about 5 minutes, just to give our next act a chance to set up and do a quick sound check. So if you want to refill your wine or you need to take a smoke break or a bathroom break, now's the time to do it.